You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
Hey, what's up? Richie here again. This is the Band Geek Podcast, Episode 4, with Danny Miranda. He's our first real deal celebrity guest. Danny's the bass player for Meatloaf, and he was also the bass player for Queen and Paul Rodgers and Blue Oyster Cult, which is how I met him. So this is a really exciting podcast. We cover a lot of stuff. We play a lot of songs. It's actually the first part of a two-parter, so I'm actually going to cut it off in the middle because he spent a lot of time here, enough to fill two episodes, so that's really exciting. We recorded this on April 12th, and I'll probably put up a video to accompany this. So let's get to it. One more order of business. If you are in the New York area or the tri-state New York area, New York, Connecticut, Blue Oyster Cult has two gigs coming up this weekend on June 20th. That's Friday. We're in Pattersonville, New York at the Harley Rendezvous. And on the 21st, we're in Ridgefield, Connecticut at the Ridgefield Playhouse. So if you're around, come check out those shows. One more shout out. I got to thank Audio Technica. This week, Audio Technica sent us a bunch of mics and headphones to use for the podcast. They really hooked us up. So you're going to start hearing those, you know, the new stuff at around episode 11. But, you know, I've always been using Audio Technica. Right now I'm speaking into an Audio Technica mic. I use Audio Technica headphones. It's awesome stuff. So check that out and enjoy the show. Thanks. We're recording. I saw
recording.
Oh, we are.
Hold on. Let me turn on my charm.
Oh, look at that.
Sorry. I left it on Long Island.
Welcome to Band Geek. I'm Richie Castellano. With me is my co-host, Jarrett Pressman.
Hey, everybody.
On drums, we have Andy Ascalise.
How's it going?
On vocals, Anne-Marie Castellano.
Yo, yo, yo.
Hanging out with us is Brandy Metaxas. Say hi.
Hi.
And our first celebrity special guest, the one, the only, Danny Miranda.
You're starting from the bottom of the pile, aren't you? He's nowhere to go but up now.
Danny, if you don't know who Danny is, you know, what rock have you been hiding under? Danny is probably the best...
I don't listen to rock anymore.
Danny is probably the best bass player in the world. He's my favorite bass player, and I'm so happy to have him here. I met Danny in 2000 when he was playing with Blue Oyster Cult, and I was 20. And I got called to fill in as their sound guy. And Danny, I immediately did not like him. And then,
are you serious?
No. I was a little afraid of you, actually.
Why?
Because you're a bit much to take if you don't know, like, you know, that you're not. Yeah, that it's all from a place of
2 minutes, and you're already insulting him.
Well,
no, it's okay. It's all right. I probably had it coming.
I brought you here to tell you why I don't like you, yeah, and the many reasons.
I got a lot of problems with you people.
Hey, bud, are we videotaping or just?
We're gonna, if we do a song, we'll have Brandy record.
Okay, but right now it's okay.
Just, yeah, we're just
all right because I'm taking my clothes off.
That's fine. No, but if you don't know that Danny has a big heart, and even though he's a little insane, it doesn't matter because it's all coming from a good place. He's a little scary when you first meet him. But you know, I got along with Bobby right away because you know, Bobby is very very warm to people he meets.
Oh yeah, he is Mr. Warm.
Especially since I was a kid, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then I had to, you know, learn about your quirks, which there are many. But anyway, I want to start off by asking you a question. Are you mad at me? No, you know, but really, are you?
No.
Danny
I'm
and
mad
I
at everybody else.
Danny and I have text messages and phone calls at randomly throughout the week, and we start with a little light back and forth kind of ball busting, and then it goes to a place where we just go too far. The both
a
of
little
us,
too far.
And then like we'll be texting, and all of a sudden I won't hear anything from him, and I go, oh no.
And then
I just crossed the line. So I go, "Are you mad at me?" And he goes, "No. Why? Why should I be mad at you?"
Well, the thing is, you know, we both forget that, and I get it with you sometimes. Like maybe he just got on a plane,
yeah,
or he's in a lesson, or usually, you know, when I wake up the day after a red light, I'm going, "Well, all right, I drank my body weight in bourbon, and I screamed at you all night. I should maybe check to see if we're still friends."
So you both turn into insecure boyfriends. Wait, are you okay? Kind of. Do you need anything? Kind of. Can I? What, kind what's
we
wrong?
Are definitely. We're definitely both chicks.
It's like Project Runway.
When it comes to this. Oh my God! No.
He
so,
just.
Not that there's anything wrong with
he
that.
He just brought up a Red Lion story.
I have so many Danny Miranda stories that I've been dying to tell and waiting for you to come here to tell.
Yeah.
I just threw my pick at you. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's like this is your life.
You guys guess know who's behind
know.
This
Do
door?
Do I have lupus well, or something?
Well, anyway, when I my first gig mixing Blue Oyster Cult, Danny and the rhythm section was Danny on bass and Bobby Rondinelli on drums, and I had been mixing weddings before then, and when you're
Which
at
is
weddings,
a little heavier than Blue Oyster Cult.
Well, when you do weddings, it's all about how quiet can you make this. Yeah. Like, let's take this like 8-piece band and make them sound tiny.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
And then finally, I got to a big gig with the Rock PA, and I'm like, oh, this is what I've been waiting for. And I just put everything into red on the console. Everything was just blowing up. And then at the end of the gig, you and Bobby were like, Bobby goes, "Are you the sound guy?" I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I heard my toms from the PA." From behind the kit.
Yeah. We wound up turning off our monitors because we were hearing the front of house.
Yeah, so.
You know
and
what
you,
I mean?
You said that to me. And
I could actually hear my bass. in the PA, even though I was behind it.
Yeah, I don't think it sounded particularly good, my first BOC gig, but it was loud. I could say that.
Was that the one with the windstorm? What about the, was it Eau Claire?
No, that was in Seaside Heights.
I thought that was in Wisconsin or Michigan.
Oh, the worst gig I ever did.
Well, this is the place for those of you who haven't been to the Midwest, they invented winter. And even in July, it's winter. And it was a windstorm, and it was like a boomerang. Everything we played came right back to us. And of course, according to Donald, it was your fault. I guess you created the wind.
I haven't cried in my adult life at this point until that point. Like, I was on the verge of tears.
Yeah.
And I might as well tell the whole story because it's an awesome story.
Not really because it doesn't involve me.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You were on the gig.
Carry on.
Okay, so I'm still mixing Blue Oyster Cult, and I would fill in for my buddy Steve Lacerra, who's a wonderful engineer.
A wonderful person.
Yeah, and a great person. I am not as good of an engineer, but I made them loud, so I got the gig, and I probably didn't charge enough money, so they kept calling me. But
work cheap, you work with them forever.
So we get on a plane, and we're going to Wisconsin to do this gig, and one of our crew guys, who will remain nameless, Danny, don't say his name.
We'll call him also Danny.
Yeah. Yeah. And he gets on the plane, and there is an elderly gentleman sitting in his seat.
That was the plane?
Yeah, that was the same day. This is the setup for the story. He's sitting in his seat. So he goes to the flight attendant, "Excuse me, miss, there's a gentleman sitting in my seat." And she goes up to the guy and says, "Sir, can I see your ticket?" And the guy... Danny's setting up his mic like Lemmy right now for some reason.
Go ahead.
Do you want it to the boom? Do you want to take him out to the boom?
No, that's cool.
You okay?
Yeah. Go ahead.
So the flight attendant says, "You know, sir, can I see your ticket?" And the guy just sort of gives her like this uncomfortable smile and like, you know, just like he doesn't speak English or something, just won't respond to her and just like looks really weird. So, and she repeats, "Sir, can I see your ticket?" And he's not doing anything. And then the flight attendant says to our crew guy, "Look, I've tried, you sit somewhere else, you know what I mean? He won't move." And he goes, "Well, you know, that's not his seat. I have a seat. I travel all the time. I have a specific seat that I like, and we've booked this seat, so I want to sit there." She goes, "What do you want me to do? I'm asking the guy. He doesn't understand me. He's not answering me." He goes, "Well, if you can't do your job, then you should just quit." And she goes, "You know what? You're right." She throws her apron down and walks off the plane.
Yes. That's not real. That's not real.
That is,
that's
real. Am I lying?
I remember that. Well, the thing is, they came and we saw an argument ensuing, and our guy, who will remain nameless, we'll call him Elvis, all of a sudden went into the cockpit. These are the days where you could go into the cockpit. And I'm going, it's never good when a passenger talks to the pilot.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you see is they're taking somebody's bag down. I'm going, they're throwing him off the plane.
So they throw the flight attendant quits on the spot, and we have to wait now for 2 hours for them to get another crew member because planes can't take off with understaffed.
Yeah. Right. And the fucking guy, sorry.
No, you no, please.
Please, oh, let it fly.
And he winds up in first class.
So anyway, here's what happened. No, here's how. Finally, they sorted out. The guy who was sitting in his seat was a stroke victim, couldn't speak. He was like paralyzed in half his body.
I've done that twice already during this story.
Yeah. So that's why. And then our crew guy felt like really bad. He goes, well, if someone would have told me that, I wouldn't have made such a stink about it. But I thought just this guy was just being a jerk. And he wasn't, you know. Yeah. So they bumped him up to first, let the guy with the stroke, you know, not have to move. And we got to our gig 15 minutes before we had to go on stage.
Oh, God.
It was the biggest gig I've ever done in my life. The bill was Blue Oyster Cult, Uriah Heep, Jethro Tull, and Ted Nugent. That was the bill. And 15 minutes. And I just remember like getting to the gig and Eric and Alan, and Bobby and Danny, like they opened their suitcases. They didn't even go to the dressing room. There was no time. It's an open air concert. They're outside taking their pants off, putting their stage clothes on, right? And there was no time to go to the dressing room. I have to walk what feels like 1,000 feet to front of house, and I look at the PA and it's massive. And I said, and they're like, okay, get a mix, no sound check. And I'm going like, oh, fuck. Right? So I'm just like bringing everything up, trying to like, okay, I guess this will sound good. Right. And we go, and then I'm like, I have to be at least 200 feet away from the stage.
Right.
So I have no idea what is going on the stage. Right? I just hear a delayed, you know, whatever. So in between every song, I'm hearing a little like, I'm like, what is that? You know, I can't figure it. It's not a big deal. Finally, Buck, in between the song, goes, Richie, it sounds like crap up here. He says it on the microphone through the PA.
In front of like.
He goes, you got a ring going on here. It sounds like crap. Right? And it was a shed. It was like a big metal shed with the subs on the stage. Right? It was basically like a resonant chamber.
One of those trailers that they do.
It was ridiculous. Yeah. And what happened is it was your mic was too far in front of the subs. So your mic was feeding back with the subs. I couldn't figure out what the hell it was. It was Danny's fault. And
always is.
To be then fair, it's the stroke
it's
victim's
my Jewish
fault.
Guilt.
then after the gig, I go up to Buck and I'm like, hey man, you know, I'm really sorry. I couldn't tell that it was a ring from how far I was. He goes, yeah, you ruined the gig. You sabotaged us. that's what he said to me.
God.
And I go.
That's his way of saying, well, you know, we're too cheap to fly the night before.
Eyes, like,
my eyes welled up. My bottom lip started to quiver. You know, like,
oh
I'm
God.
Like, I'm so sorry.
And you were like 20, right?
Yeah, I think I was like 22 or something. And then I'm in the corner.
Really
I'm in the corner, like just sulking, like trying not to cry. And then Bobby comes up to me. He goes, what's the matter, man? I was like, I ruined the fucking gig, man. I ruined the fucking gig. And he goes, we got here 15 minutes before we had to play. He goes, you didn't ruin the gig. He goes, they ruined the fucking gig.
So, Elvis, and he's right. Elvis ruined
so,
the gig.
And so he's right. then like that night, there was like a big conference call between them and their manager saying, never again. We're always going to fly in the day before. That lasted, I think, about a week.
Yeah.
And now we're back to flying in 15 minutes before the show.
Yeah.
Except we've become efficient at setting up 15 minutes. Now we can actually pull that off of doing it 15 minutes before the show.
No, but if you trace it back far enough, it's totally Elvis's fault.
It always is because he's an idiot.
But anyway,
not the real Elvis, of course, because he was great.
So
really preferred
we should,
him from the 60s.
We should play a song. We have some Facebook requests. I haven't told anybody what this is yet, but I told everybody I'm jamming with you. And so what songs out of those three would you like to do first, Danny?
I have a list on the wall. How about the Squeeze tune?
Okay. We're going to do some Squeeze.
What key are we going to do this in?
You know, I'll do it in the original for you.
Should I tune this up?
Oh, yeah, let me give you a tuner.
It's really great to be here with everyone. It's great to be anywhere.
Can you do the keyboards later, Andy?
Sure.
Can you overdub them?
What kind of a bullshit snark?
Rich, you didn't tell anybody where Philip is.
Do you know what that
means? Unfortunately, Philip's not here.
Oh, where is Phil? Oh, thank you, dude.
Yeah, do it while I set up.
Oh, Philip's not here.
Thanks. Good job,
man. What is he? Is he working? He's working. Unfortunately, we normally record during the week, but for Danny's schedule, we had to do it on a Saturday. So Danny's filling in for Philip, which is fine because they both play bass. Well, that works. You want your lyrics here, sweetheart?
Yeah,
you squeeze lyrics.
Hey,
standing up.
I can't remember the order of the lyrics. I know they are.
Why were you?
You've been playing this song for 15 years.
Wait, what did you...
Why?
Because you randomly yell at people.
Even back then?
Yes.
Because I know now I'm old and bitter.
You looked more like a pirate back then with the way you dressed. I mean, it was very scary when I met you at first.
All the pirates
I've warmed up to
you
since, obviously.
Obviously. Not like most others. Still got a lot of problems with some other people.
We'll get to that. But I want to get a song happening.
So unlike previous weeks, we're just going to jam with Danny, so no education this week.
Oh, you know what? Let's do that. I know I haven't really told you much about what we're doing with this show, but we're doing like, it's like half nerd stuff, half music, half like education.
That's too many halves.
Oh yeah, I guess a third.
It's like I'm half Spanish, I'm
we're not the kind of nerds that know
and
math.
And 0% math.
Very, that's really cool.
So, let's talk about the chords to this. Do you want to take people through the chords, Danny? Or do you want me to do it?
Well, the chords?
Yeah. Like if someone's listening to this at home and they have a guitar with them and they want to play along.
Well, I'll tell you what. I was always a big fan of Squeeze since I was in high school. And what I really dug was, not unlike Genesis and bands like that, where a lot of times, you know, the bass player wouldn't play the root note. Would play the fifth or the third or whatever, and they had a lot of contrary movement between the guitar and the bass, and I felt it was really progressive music. You know, they seemed to get thrown into this new wave thing, you know, because they were, you know,
right,
well-dressed chaps with trousers. But it was great progressive music, and the lyrics were, you know, on the level of McCartney, a very English lyrics. I was listening Up the Junction on the way here. Mm. You know, I'm going, that could only be written by an Englishman, you know? It's just the way they talk.
You ever listen to any of Blur's stuff?
Not really.
Some of their... I mean, I only know that one song, the Woohoo! That
yeah,
song,
I like
but,
that.
But their other stuff is kind of similar, like English progressive pop kind of stuff.
Yeah.
There's this whole weird subgenre.
It's really cool because, I mean, you can really hear where they're from. Like, if you listen to James Taylor or something, you're like, mm-hmm. This is a guy from the, you know, from America, you know? And can I get a little more volume on my bass?
Yeah, sure.
Speaking of the chords to squeeze. But I don't know if I'm explaining it. Thank you. But, you know, I mean, I think they're absolutely brilliant music. It's by no means simple music.
It's like if the Beatles kept making music into the 80s, like I feel like it would sound a little like what Squeeze did.
Probably would.
Because it has those like kind of like Lennon-y chord progressions, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where it was like really fun. But this song has an incredible chord progression. I'll start it and you can help me out if I screw something up. Andy usually does that. He sits there and goes, no, that's not it.
No, that's you're talking about Philly.
This is me lowering my glasses right now.
I'm wearing my glasses just so I can lower them at you. When someone makes a mistake, Danny lowers his glasses and stares at you with this expression of you fucking wanker over his glasses.
Tell them what I did to Jules's kid.
We've all
whenever
seen
something
that
disappoints me, you know, I had this old doctor when I was a kid, and you know when they used to wear those glasses that would hang off the nose, and you know he'd say, you know, Daniel, did you eat that putty? No. And he gives me that look like
he loves his glasses.
You know, what is that spring from a pen sticking out of your hand? I don't know. And he gives me that look. You know.
So at Jules's party, what did was
explain. Yeah, this miracle child that he's got.
Jules has a son, and
Jules is the drummer.
Jules Rodino.
Jules is the thank you guys. Jules is the drummer for Blue Oyster Cult. He's wonderful, and he has a son who I think is six now.
Or five, gonna be six.
Yeah. And he is like a little prodigy. He plays drums and he sounds like a grown-up.
He jammed with the band.
Yeah, he jammed with Blue Oyster Cult and he was amazing.
It's
so
unbelievable.
We're playing a song. I think we're playing like You Shook Me.
It was the ZZ Top.
It was Highway to Hell.
Oh, Highway to Hell.
Because I remember I had to learn that.
And and there's one spot where the kid misses like one hit or something. Or he's sped up for a second. Like, it's a
five-year-old.
It's a five-year-old. He's nailing the song, everything. Danny, out of reflex, I think, looks down at him, puts his glasses down, and stares at this little kid. And I look at him. I go, and he can't. Catch me seeing you doing
birthday.
It.
Yeah.
It was at his fifth birthday party.
And he goes,
it was the kid's fifth birthday. And I go, I freaked him the fuck out.
And I said, he's five.
And, it's his birthday.
Yeah, and it's his birthday, and you're staring him down.
I said, it's no excuse. From now on, and since then, the kid is scared shit of me. He won't come anywhere near me.
Yeah. This is what I get for not getting my quote to pay a gig. Playing with amateurs.
And then that's when Andrew miraculously found a bottle of Jack Daniels. No matter where we are in the world, he finds a bottle of Jack Daniels.
Andrew is
I think
is
he
my
has
tech.
One in his glove compartment.
All right, so the Pulling Muscles from the Shell, it has amazing chords. All right, it stays on an A minor, and the bass goes from A to G to F to E. So let's listen to what that sounds like. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4. Okay, now we have this D minor arpeggio. And then I go A minor G. So that's D minor, D, F, A, D. D minor, A minor, D minor. And now we have this song's amazing. Now we have a C with a G in the bass. And then G. And now an F major arpeggio. So C, F.
This is my favorite part here.
Okay, now, I don't even know how would you describe this part?
Because it's E, F, C, D.
Okay, but I'm doing like an E, like pedals sort of thing. I just play E
I
octaves.
Well, you know what's really cool is a lot of times with squeeze, they leave out the actual chords.
Right.
You know, like the guitar is playing what you think would be put on top of the chords, but sometimes there is no chord.
So let's play that part. You know what I mean? We have E. And you play. Okay, so what's happening there? I got
There was another guitar. That guy looks like Ricky Gervais. Plays the chord. What's his name? What's his name?
Chris Difford.
Who's now in Mumford & Sons.
Chris Difford.
Is he?
So, okay, we have an E.
No, but he looks the same asshole. I'm not even high.
Oh,
sorry,
my God.
Kid.
Richie's just relishing.
Don't show
right
this. Don't show this to your mother.
This is what I've been waiting for. When I did the podcast, after this, I don't have to do any more podcasts.
The pizza's kicking in. You know what it is?
Amory,
it's like a drug.
That was some coffee you made, I guess.
That's nice. The mojo's coming in.
This guy, is this what we're talking
that's
about?
That's how we roll here.
That's him. That's Chris Difford.
Yeah, that's Ricky Gervais when he was funny.
Oh, my God.
No, actually, I like Ricky Gervais. That's not right. That's me saying I need another slice of pizza.
Brandy, can you bring another slice of pizza?
No, I'm only kidding. No. No, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, so we have E major. And then he plays the bass, and I'm playing the E, so that makes us an F major 7th. Right? And then I stay on the A, the E, you play a C, so that's C major. And then you're playing
that's a D, really.
A D, so it's D chord, yeah, with the F sharp in the bass.
Right.
Yeah, so it's a D9 with an F sharp in the bass. Yeah. So if you're playing regular chords, we have E, spinning faces at the F sharp, F major 7th. C, D with an F sharp in the bass, and then it repeats. And if you drop their boards and drive, and everybody wants to have. Okay, now we have back to like the verse chords of the A minor thing with the A, G, F in the bass.
And I feel like William Tell.
Now D minor, B flat major 7th, A minor 7th. A flat 6, G 6, and now C, F. I'm sorry. C, G, F, G sharp diminished. So that's it.
This song is so good.
I mean, that's no bullshit.
That's heavy.
You know, that's no bullshit.
That's
That seems more.
And the thing is, you know, bands like Elvis Costello, Joe Jackson, I mean, these are really seriously brilliant musicians who came out of the punk era, but they had a tremendous vocabulary.
Oh, yeah.
In music. And it's really cool because they had the punk angst, you know, they had the down and dirty, you know, just trimming the fat attitude about music, but it was as deep to me as any other kind of progressive music, just without the 15 keyboards.
I would never think to do A flat 6 into G 6 or yeah. 13.
Yeah.
I guess it's a 6th chord. There's no 7th in that. I would never think that. That's just
sounds
so
like
brilliant.
Sleepwalk.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Amazing. Oh, I'm also playing a Telecaster for you because I know you like the way this guitar sounds.
That guitar sounds awesome.
Yeah.
It does sound.
Okay, let's play it.
Let's do it.
All right, let's try it.
What pickup should I use? Should I use one?
I don't know. I'm using the front pickup, so you use the back.
All right, no problem. All right.
It's the Song of Hope.
I never sing it in this key. I usually do it down a whole step, and I know Danny hates that, so we'll do it in the original key.
You're Richie Keys.
Okay, count us in, Andy.
Wait.
Oh yeah, we need our video person.
She had to get the.
That's cool. So someone
was. Where'd you put the battery?
We were playing a gig last night.
Oh, is it not over there?
Oh, it's right here. Richie.
We're waiting for Brandy.
Yeah.
Richie. So I'll tell you. Say we were playing a gig last night, you know, and we're at my friend's house, and he brought us sandwiches. We're eating sandwiches. Uh-huh. Somebody's taking pictures of us. I'm like, who wants to see a picture of us eating a fucking sandwich? Am I right? That's personal. It's like going to the bathroom. It's a private thing.
Well,
it's
for, a circle of life. For me and Richie, eating a sandwich is like going to the bathroom because we do it at the same time.
Oh, God.
Oh, you too?
Yeah.
I thought it was just a Long Island thing.
Just makes it easier.
Yeah, I mean, usually...
That's multitasking.
Usually people are cool about, like, if you're at a gig and you're eating, people know to just... They could just... say hi or something, but sometimes people want to...
Anne-Marie just gave you a look like, what the hell did I just get myself into for the next 50 years?
Yeah. Luckily, Anne-Marie is his first wife. He'll have a few more.
Oh, my God. Does this sound good?
It sounds great, yes. Right?
Hey, what do you think of this?
All right, that's Richie mocking me, obviously. So, you know,
I'll tell that story in a bit.
We're good.
All right, let's do this.
One, two, three. They do it down on the camel sands. They do it at Waikiki. Lazing about the beach all day and night. The crickets creaky. Screaming faces in the sky. A high roll up its paperback. Super drop it, boys, and dry.
That was a lot of chords in that one.
That was great.
Awesome. I've never done it in that key. I guess I can do it in that key now. You know what? When I don't have to sing like 40 songs in a night, I could do higher keys.
Sure. And you're not screaming to the people.
So I want to actually ask you a few questions. We can bring the lights down again.
Oh.
let's get back in the mood.
It's the romantic segment.
If you start playing Barry White, I'm running out of here.
Well, that's that Shaft, sorry. We could probably do some Barry White.
Yeah.
My first, my last, my everything. Oh, the answer to.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, my dreams.
That's enough of that.
Well, scary. We all knew it.
That was really, that was really good.
Me, where is my fucking tuxedo?
I saw a picture of you at a wedding, playing a wedding. I think you were playing a Steinberger bass, and you had hair that looked like Sideshow Bob.
Yeah.
Is that, was that actually you?
That was me.
Yeah. Wow. How many weddings did you do? Like, were you really into that?
Yeah, I played in two different wedding bands. I guess about 10 years.
Okay, I've known you for a long time now, probably 15 years.
Almost 15 years.
So
but you're a wee one.
What made you, what got you into music? Like, what made you want to learn how to play an instrument?
I wanted to be like my older brother.
Your older brother plays?
My older brother's a piano player. And he used to have this piano. He had two things that had an impact on me. He had a piano in my mother's living room, and he had a B3 in the basement.
Oh, man. Now, so, now how old? How much older than?
He's 12 years older than me.
So when,
that's
when
a
you
significant
were like,
amount.
Okay, so when you were like 10, he was playing gigs already and stuff like
well,
that?
Well, yeah, I mean, less than that. And my sister's even older. So... not to bore everybody, but so when I was real young, 4 or 5, that was the '60s, and when my brother and sister would have parties, they would play things like, you know, Motown stuff or the Beatles. You know, I remember hearing Smokey Robinson and the Supremes, and I saw the look on everybody's faces on how happy everybody was, and after watching the news with the Vietnam War and the riots and all, I'm going, okay, this makes people happy. Hmm. I'm going to stick with this. So then my brother had two sides. He had the legit side. He was classically trained. And he would go home and he would play his Beethoven and his Brahms. And I would sit underneath the piano. I don't know if any of you have ever done this, because I was fucked up even back then. But if you sit underneath the piano on the bass side, it will make any AC/DC or Motorhead sound like the Bee Gees. This is the heavy, you know, hearing Beethoven from underneath is the heaviest shit ever.
Yeah.
And then he'd go downstairs and play Jimmy Smith on the organ.
Wow.
You know what I mean? And then you had the Dirty Blues, the Grant Green stuff and all that. And my brother's band never really had a bass player until later on in the 70s. It was always my brother's left hand.
Really?
So I learned how to play bass because we'd sit and play Chicago blues, and I'd watch my brother on the pedals of the left hand, and then he'd say, okay, now you do it.
You'd have to play on the keyboard?
No, I had to play on the bass.
When did you get a bass? Was bass your first instrument?
No, it was saxophone.
Really? When, was it a part of like a school band or something
like
that?
Yeah, you had a choice of either like violin, cello, viola, or saxophone, or trumpet.
Okay. Were you any good at it?
I was good. Yeah, I was in this mug. Got, you know.
Get out of here.
Good. Yeah, I was.
If you picked up a sax now, would you be able to do anything on it?
Probably not.
Really?
No. It's been 30 years. Man. But I started with alto, and then I moved on to tenor. And I dug it until, you know, I got Frampton Comes Alive or something. I said, uh-oh.
You know. So did you get a guitar or a bass first?
I got a guitar. My brother would always fiddle with guitar, and he had a Zimgar guitar. And I remember it was... Do you guys know what that
I
is?
I know what that is.
And it had these two rocker switches for the pickups, right? They were little rocker switches, and it was just kind of a maroon guitar. And in fact, I'm a lefty. pictures of me as a kid, I'm playing it backwards.
Really?
Yeah, I'm a lefty. I write lefty, and I do a couple other things lefty that I won't mention now. So anyway, I would mess with it, and my brother would, the first couple songs he showed me was, Hey Joe, you know,
Let's do some Hey Joe.
That lick. Yeah. And this.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't do this part. I didn't, well, when I was a little kid, I didn't learn the whole tune. I just learned that riff. And then Lady Madonna taught me. You know, I thought that was the heaviest thing, yeah. You know? And I learned these two things. And anyway.
So,
but that's how I got started in music.
And you had a guitar. And the Zimbar guitar.
I would play my brother's guitar, and I wasn't allowed. See, I broke everything when I was a kid.
Really? You don't say.
Yeah, I know.
So that means I'm on the path to being allowed.
And my mother, bless her, because...
Stop looking at me that way, Richie.
You know, he would say, don't touch my piano. And I would play it until he got home. And my mother would not admit. She would cover for me. But my brother would come home and look at the piano going, you played it.
I put my balls on your piano.
Yeah, just like, he dusted it for fingerprints or something. He saw my DNA, something. But she never told me, no, you're not allowed. She was like, you're not supposed to, but I don't see anything.
I met your mom. I had the pleasure of meeting her a year ago or so.
Something like that.
I had to come pick up something from you.
That's right.
And
which you never bought.
And, that's I'm sorry. And she was so sweet and normal.
Yeah, I know.
And
how
did this happen? So when did you get a bass?
I got it was a copy of a jazz bass. It's interesting that you asked me that. I got a copy of a jazz bass at a music store in Hempstead that my dad took me to when I was about 14, I guess. Mm-hmm. It was $75.
Wow.
And leading up to that, my first real bass, I have to tell you this because it's funny. There was a local music store in Babylon, Long Island, which is where I'm from. And I would go there with my dad to buy strings or whatever, because it was closer than Sam Ash or something. And there was this bass in the window that looked like it was from another planet. And it was a Carl Thompson bass, who was, it was made in Brooklyn. It was handmade. And it was $500. And it was so out of my league, you know. And my dad bought it for me.
Wow.
And it wound up being not right for me because I was really a tiny kid and I had a 2.5-octave neck. I couldn't reach the first fret. But anyway, I'm sorry.
No, keep going.
So anyway, and ironically, the other day, I was driving somewhere with my mom and I said, well, that's where DeMartino's music store used to be, you know. Mm-hmm. And things have been all become gentrified and all that, and now it's an ice cream shop or something, but we'd go there to dream, you know?
Yeah.
And anyway, make a long story short, this guy, Roy DeMartino, just this week reconnected with me on Facebook, and he says, you know, I got a picture of that bass.
Right.
So he's going to scan it for me and
nice.
Give it. I mean, that was a real, that was, you know, some of the happiest times, you know? When you go to a music store on Saturday afternoon and they'd let you play everything and they knew you weren't going to buy anything.
Right.
And they just, you know, they'd let you hang around because it was important.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
Did something inspire you to play bass? Was it like,
I hated it.
You hated
it? I wanted to play guitar.
But your brother's band needed a bass player.
No. Like, we had my three best friends, like, we all played guitar, and, like, you draw straws.
Right.
And I got the short straw. And I didn't even have a bass, so I took that Zimgar, and I took the top two strings off. And I played on the bass pickup. And that was my bass.
Wow.
And I kept saying, Dad, I can't do this. I can't be a bass player if I don't have a bass. And my brother was saying, you know, if you can always still play guitar, but if you play bass, you'll work more, and, you know, it'll be a real sellable thing.
Right.
Because you'll have the knowledge of guitar and piano, but, you know, guitar players are a dime a dozen, you know. He was
right.
Saying, you know, bass players, you'll work more, which wound up being bullshit, because every guitar player I know is working more than I am.
What did your dad do? Because he seems like he was very supportive as far as you and your brother doing
music. He was an electronics assembler. He was the least musically inclined of any human being I've ever known. But he was the most understanding and of my brother and myself, as if he was a musician. And but he had a great talent because he built the first digital clocks and watches I've ever seen. Because
wow.
He worked for the government. And wow. Before there was LEDs out, he brought home... This clock is still in my mother's room 40 years later.
That's cool.
But I would bring home these amps, like these B-15s, and my father would take the amps apart and retube it and get new transistors. Wow. And,
that's awesome.
You know. Anyway.
Anne-Marie, the reason we're all shuffling here in the background, I'm sorry, Danny, is Anne-Marie's got to go to a gig now.
Oh, let's play
some. We're going to play a song that you requested.
Yeah.
And we learned it just for you.
I'm sorry, Anne-Marie.
So we're going to do it, and then she's going to bounce, but we're going to do this song because we need her to do this song.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be sorry.
I'm rambling.
No,
I'm ruining your show.
You had a rough time getting here today, so...
I got to talk to you about the Staten Island Expressway. Blow that fucking thing up.
They should really rename that because doesn't really...
That's new Guantanamo.
That's Richie Aux 2 is my... grab this, you can sing on my mic.
Were there a lot of people on the Belt Parkway flying kites and fishing?
Actually, I didn't see a lot of that. All I could see ahead was... it was a parking lot.
Do you want to just use my mic here?
No, you want to use mine?
No, this is the closest.
I'm sorry, I'm making her late. I make everybody late.
No, she's fine. We're right on schedule.
I feel like I'm sitting with my therapist right now.
It's the couch.
Yeah, it's something about the couch.
So, if you couldn't tell, it's a little cramped down here.
Hi, Anne-Marie.
Hi.
Anne-Marie's the greatest.
This is the first podcast Anne-Marie's done and not in sweatpants.
Yep.
What do you think of this?
Wow, that's
Richie
really cool.
Richie is playing a Line 6 Variax.
Oh yeah, you want 6 lines.
You
want 6 lines on that. Way better than 5 lines. 5 lines are.
So he's going to switch from 12-string to electric 12-string.
Hey, is this a new snark?
I
like this.
I can't hear Andy anymore.
Hey, check 1-2.
Oh, Richie, I like this new snark.
Yeah, it's the mini snark.
Can I buy it?
Yeah.
I'll buy this one.
I'll take it.
Are you good? Are you good, Amory?
Almost.
All right, let me.
I had the opportunity to hear it about. Oh wow, that sounds awesome.
This, yeah, this. Right now, I'm using the, like Andy just said, the Variax 300. This is the older one, but I mean, it's a little tough to play. The new one's better, the James Tyler one. Mm-hmm. But I have this hooked up Ethernet.
James Tyler, I love his October Road.
Okay, never mind. Let's just play this fucking song.
You know, smiling face, we can go there.
And it's the Band Geek Conquers.
Oh, yeah, this is Band Geek Conquers. Yeah, I'm going to teach you Band Geek Conquers really quick. Play FGA. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Band Geek Conquers!
There you go.
That's cool. Paul Schaefer in the band, ladies.
Andy, there's Simon still time. You could still... Your mom said...
All right, so what song did you request?
I requested a Rush song because I wanted to hear Anne-Marie sing something. And also the other things I liked were too difficult for me to play. but honestly, I wanted her to sing something, and I always thought that you'd be great singing Rush stuff. Nice. And they're one of my favorite bands. And
they're awesome. This song is awesome.
They're awesome, and it's a really great lyric, and it's a great song. And, you know... I don't think this would be over really anybody's head to understand. It's a really great piece of music, and Anne-Marie really, she's going to be awesome on this.
I hope I don't ruin it for you.
No, there's no such thing.
Me too, because I just learned this.
Well, you're another story.
As we were cleaning the house for your arrival.
All right, ready?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Song of Hope.
Mold a new reality closer to the heart, closer to the heart. The blacksmith and the artist reflected in their art, forged their creativity closer to the heart, closer to the heart.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. Yes.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. You can go do your gig now.
Thanks.
Have a good gig.
I won't be singing Rush, I assure you.
What is it, a bar mitzvah?
I can't believe you did that.
That's that was awesome.
That was great.
Hard dive into Frozen.
Thank you,
Anne-Marie. Oh, Danny.
That was amazing. Oh, my God, that was amazing.
I didn't go overboard with the Gettys.
You can never go overboard with the Getty. That was good.
Everything I play on this bass sounds like Rush.
Hey, you can keep playing that bass. We're gonna keep going. We're not done yet.
Don't take your headphones off, man. We're still going.
Yeah, we're still going. Anne-Marie just has to leave.
I got more shit to say.
Yeah, we know you have more shit to say.
Thank you.
Finally, we can fart and scratch ourselves.
Oh man, so that was pretty insane. Because I have some more questions I want to ask you. Yeah.
Can we talk about that song a little bit?
Oh,
I remember.
We should talk about that song.
When I was listening to it to learn it for this, like the bass plays the melody a lot during that song. Like he's playing and singing the same thing, and it's pretty wild that the bass part does that.
As it should.
You know, even in the old days, even like the record before, and like All the World's a Stage, you know, like Bastille Day and all that stuff. And looking back, like you know, and. Like, okay, the bass is playing a G, so it's a G chord.
Right.
You hear the guitar? No. Even like, hold on, excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah, this is the kind of podcast where you really need to have the instrument in your hand the whole time.
Yeah.
Because we're going to talk about music.
Luckily, there's always one in reach.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like Anthem, right? You know, the verses... E, C, D, E, right? You know, he's playing a G over the C. And, you know, not trying to be clever or cute, you know, like Nathan East or something like that. But it's just really cool. It's everything McCartney did it.
McCartney really, really started all that stuff, and he was just trying to emulate the Motown guys.
Yeah, but you know, he did. I think more than the Motown guys. I mean, I'm not saying they kept to the roots, of course, but I think he even took that more to an extreme. Like he played in that style, but he took more harmonic chances. Well, because the music was different than Motown, of course. But, you know, I'm not saying Jameson never played a fifth in the bass, but I think he did it more. You know what I mean? And
Then that sort of lineage traced through, like, to the 70s. I think McCartney was the first guy to start taking chances on the bass line and make it more melodic and play not the root.
Yeah.
And then that sort of, you can trace that through the 70s to, like, John Paul Jones and Chris Squire. And
Boz Burrell,
and Entwistle.
Sure,
you know what I mean, Entwistle was a little more aggressive.
Yeah,
but and definitely Geddy Lee, because I think Geddy has a lot of Chris Squire in him. Because
a lot of Chris Squire in early Entwistle too. And but you know, I mean, I'm wondering if a lot of that came from say George Martin, because one of you said, hey, and a classical musician plays, you know, like those Bach things where it's only the bass and the melody,
right?
And what's in between is really only implied.
Yep.
I wonder if George Martin would say, you know, here's how I would play it on the piano.
Kind of right. Like
play it, you know.
Play the closest note in the chord, not the jump.
Yeah, I mean, you treat, you know, the bass is going down, the melody is going up, you know.
Yeah.
And I wonder, or Andrew Lord Oldman, you know, with the Stones. I wonder if that stuff, because it's a really sophisticated thing. I don't think, you know, folk guys or blues guys think that way.
Right.
I think classical guys think that way.
I mean, as a piano
player... Maybe I'm wrong.
As a piano player, we always think that way. It's
a natural instinct.
Instead of moving my hand all the way down here, this note of the chord is right there, so I could just play that.
Right, but if you grew up playing Chuck Berry, if you see the guitar player playing an A chord, you're not going to say, I think an E would be cool.
Right.
You don't do it. That's wrong.
Now, I want to...
It's just wrong.
Part of the... when I'm watching an interview with somebody, say I'm watching an interview with McCartney, right? No one ever asks him, what's your approach to coming up with a bass line? What do you know about music? Where are you getting this stuff from? They're always like, oh, you know.
What about John?
Yeah, what's your relationship with Yoko? Or, you know, who are you marrying? Like, honestly, like, that, all that bullshit isn't going to, you know, last throughout history. The music's going to last throughout history.
Yeah, I want, you know, so, those important questions have never been really asked.
So again, when I'm doing this podcast, I want to make sure I don't fall into that same trap. So I want to ask you something, because I think out of all the musicians I've ever played with, you are probably in at least the top five of best ears I've ever, of anybody I've ever met. And I'm going to sound like a conceited for a second. I think I have pretty good ears. I think you have better ears than me. And I want to know, like, how did you develop that? I mean, are you trained, like, in theory, or is it, you know, like...
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
We're going to stop it there, guys, with a cliffhanger ending. We're going to find out the answer to that question and many more next week on the Band Geek Podcast. I'm Richie Castellano. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for part two of Danny Miranda. Band Geek Podcast. Band.